Good morning, Park City. You're listening to the Friday edition of the Local News Hour. I'm your host, Jennifer Dobner, filling in for Roger Goldman, who's a bit under the weather today. And speaking of the weather, I know we're all wondering when winter will arrive on the Wasatch Back. So on the phone with us now is Cedric Haynes from ABC4 with a look at what's in store over the next few days.
Happy Friday, KPCW listeners. Your forecast for your Friday is calling for a little bit of patchy, dense fog developing out there for the morning hours. Otherwise, as we go throughout your Friday, look for partly cloudy skies, a very slim chance of an isolated sprinkle or two. But for the most part, we should be dry. High temperatures will be in the mid-40s for us in Park City, with high temperatures climbing to around 50 in the Heber Valley. As we go into your weekend, get ready for a little bit more sunshine expected for your Saturday, and I think for your Sunday as well. We'll call it sunny skies for your Saturday, with temperatures starting off in the 20s, mid to upper 20s across the Wasatch Back. We'll see those highs in the upper 40s for us in Park City, with highs on your Saturday afternoon in the low to mid 50s in the Heber Valley. Moving into your Sunday, look for clear starts out there across the region, with temperatures again down into the 20s to kick off the morning. We'll see those highs back into the mid to upper 40s in Park City, with highs in the low 50s in the Heber Valley. As we kick off the holiday week, we're looking at partly cloudy skies as we go throughout your Monday. Cooler air will begin to flow into the area, so morning low temperatures will be into the mid to upper 20s. We'll see those highs only around 40 for Park City on your Monday, with highs in the upper 40s in the Heber Valley. Gets a little cooler as we go into your Tuesday, behind a weak front that's going to move through. Partly cloudy skies, morning low temperatures dipping down into the teens for both Park City and the Heber Valley for your Tuesday morning. High temperatures maybe not even getting above freezing for us in Park City, with highs right around 32 degrees. In the Heber Valley, we should see those temperatures in the upper 30s to right around 40. As we go into the middle of next week, a busy travel day on Wednesday. It looks dry, partly sunny skies, cold conditions to start. Temperatures down into the mid to upper teens. High temperatures in the 30s for us in Park City, with highs in the low 40s for the Heber Valley. And the all-important big Thanksgiving Day forecast. Yeah, we're going to keep an eye on this forecast. There's a weak front that's going to move by to our north, but it could get close enough to graze us with a few light rain or snow showers across the area, with highs in the mid-40s in Park City and high temperatures right around the 50-degree mark in the Heber Valley. As I look at your latest forecast for the Wasatch Back, I'm ABC4 meteorologist Cedric Haynes.
Coming up this morning, we'll have the Wasatch Community Foundation's new board chair, Cy Hutt, and vice chair, Kathy Carr. They're going to talk about some leadership changes within the foundation and some holiday volunteer opportunities. Then we'll have Mallory Bateman from the Kem C. Gardner Policy Institute, and she's going to talk with us about the Wasatch County's predicted population explosion over the next few decades. And finally, we'll have Ski Utah President and CEO Nathan Rafferty, and we're going to talk about what skiers and riders can expect in terms of resort upgrades this coming season. And then at 9 o'clock, after Local News Hour, we have the community campfire. This week, we're going to hear about five moms who are close friends and major bosses in their professional lives, and a hike they made to Havasupai Falls, which is at the bottom of the Grand Canyon. I hear you're going to laugh and shake your head in disbelief at some of their antics. We also have a wonderful live music session from Meredith Moon and more from Bill Skinner's Skinny on Sports. We'll see you at 9 o'clock for the community campfire. And before we get started with our guests this morning, we're going to give you a bit of local news. The Park City School District plans to implement a new curriculum meant for young students with autism and significant developmental delays. KPCW's Christine Weller reports additions could come as early as January.
The Park City School District Board of Education plans to adopt a new curriculum for special education students in preschool and early elementary. The program is called STAR Autism Support. Superintendent Lindsay Huntsman said other Utah school districts use this program, which will be a first for Park City.
We have seen an increase in students with autism, and we know that our students learn in different ways. And this particular program has a step-by-step lesson for our teachers, hands-on activities, tools to help students communicate, and ways to check progress.
Special Education Coordinator Kara Breckwald told the board Tuesday the program is appropriate for children with a cognitive capacity from 18 months to 9 years old. Behavior specialist Brittany Bly said a change to the preschool program this year helped the special education team recognize some students needed extra help. This year, the Park City School District's preschool team moved all education support professionals and students in special education programs under one roof.
Putting all the students at Jeremy Ranch has really helped us see that there's a lot of need for students that have level two or three autism, which is more profound, where there's deficits in adaptive skills, communication skills, pre-learning skills.
Burkwald said Trailside Elementary also has a group of students who need similar support. Between the preschool and elementary, she said at least 10 students would benefit from the STAR curriculum. Families can learn more at a virtual conference December 3rd at 5 p.m. District leaders will share how the program works in classrooms and answer questions. Huntsman said the board will likely approve the curriculum at its meeting December 16th and could implement it as early as January. Christine Weller, KPCW News.
In the studio with us now is Cy Hutt, the new board chair of the Wasatch Community Foundation. He's going to talk about some leadership news. And also on the phone is Foundation Vice Chair Kathy Carr, who has some ideas for volunteer opportunities this holiday season. Good morning and welcome to both of you.
Good morning, Jennifer. Thank you.
Happy to have
you. Good morning.
Hi, Kathy. Before we get into your new role, Cy, can you just remind our listeners about the work that Wasatch Community Foundation does?
Absolutely. We celebrated our 25th anniversary this year, so we've been around a while. And we started really with the idea of from the community for the community. So we try to unite community individuals as well as resources for the well-being around five different pillars. So we focus on health and human services, education, the arts, and recreation.
Kathy, do you have anything to add?
That's great. And it truly is from the community for the community in everything that we do.
And is it for particular segments? Is it mostly for youth, or is it for all ages and different kinds of programs depending
really,
on need?
Yeah, all ages. We have several programs to support youth. But we also for our senior citizens as well. Mm-hmm. So, and we have some initiatives that we do, you know, we fund and have volunteers for. We also work with a lot of other local not-for-profits and organizations to help fundraise for the good work that they're already doing.
So you're having a lot of impact, it sounds like.
Yeah.
That's great. So how long have you been involved with the foundation, Cy, and when were you appointed as chair of the board?
I've been on the board for 6 years, mm-hmm. and was just appointed as the chair November 1st.
Because mm-hmm, you're not busy enough.
That's right.
Yeah. And do you have a particular vision for where, you, as board chair, you want to take the vision, you know, to the foundation to next steps?
Well, for being around for 25 years, there's still a lot of people who don't know what we do. And don't know us. We have a lot of new members of our community that have moved in recently. So a lot of what we're going to focus on is exposure, helping people understand what our mission is and what we're doing. And we're also recruiting for some new members. We would love people who are interested in serving on the board, serving on those pillar committees, or just helping with an initiative that they're interested in.
Any special qualifications, or just a love of the Heber Valley and where you live? And
a love of the Heber Valley and a passion for getting engaged is great. Someone who has fundraising experience or communications marketing experience, we would love those skill sets in particular.
So, Kathy, I wanted to ask you, you're the vice chair and the education pillar chair, but as I understand it, you know, size appointment is not the only change on the board. So you have some other new members. Is that right?
We do. Well, we kind of follow a pattern mm-hmm. where the former chair, Josh Jukes, is now going to be our past chair. So he continues on the executive board. And then, like Cy said, we do have a couple of spots open on the executive board, on the regular board. And then we are always glad to have people join us on the pillars and even just for specific projects.
And so each pillar has its own focus and its own set of goals. But tell me about some of those. Like education, Kathy, that's your area. What are the pillars of your education goals?
So on our education pillar, we are focused on a lifelong learning, that it comes from, you know, early pre-K programs all the way up to our senior citizens. We're always learning. So we try and serve across the lifespan. We have a really special program that we started a couple of years ago due to some donations from a couple of local women who have retired. It's called Women Rising, and it's to encourage women who have a need to go back to school, finish that degree, or even start their undergraduate degree as an adult. So we have scholarship money just to kind of kickstart them back into their program. Along with that, every quarter, about every 3 months, we offer a free workshop that discusses ways that we can support a woman's educational journey. But we also do some positive affirmations and talk about the things that women deal with. So we've had topics such as women in business, women and journaling, how that is impactful. So that's just a little tidbit of what we do. And then we support Wasatch School District by funding gaps in services. So they're a great partner to have, and we're very aware of some of the things that they're not able to fund through taxes and other fees. So we work very closely with our school district in making sure that we're able to help them.
Mm-hmm. And Cy, I don't want to ask you to pick your favorite child, but is there another pillar or initiative that is near and dear to your heart? And tell us about that.
Well, I, you know, because I'm the president of Heber Valley Hospital, the health pillar, I think, is a pretty awesome one. And the human services, both of those do great work. There's kind of a combination of pillars working on our event this Saturday. So this Saturday is our Thanksgiving dinner, and that's hosted by the health pillar. But the arts pillar provides entertainment, and we have a coat drive that we'll be giving out, be able to sign up for various programs for folks in need. So it really brings everybody together. But the health pillar does a kids safety fair in the spring. They do kind of wellness checks for a back to school for kids who don't have insurance and aren't signed up with a pediatrician, et cetera. So just a lot of good things. And really, we're pillar driven, I would say. The board is there to support the pillars, and the pillars are actively looking for needs in the community, whether it be the new pump track that was just built, or more exposure to the arts. So food insecurity is a big thing we're working on right now.
I think particularly lately, it's been a big concern across the country.
Yep.
So tell me a little bit more about Thanksgiving dinner on Saturday. What's happening there besides like turkey and all the trimmings?
Kathy, you want to take that one?
Yeah, sure. Sorry, I'm calling in for all the listeners, so I can't see what's happening in the studio.
We don't know what's happening
here
either, so we'll just roll with it. So.
Okay, it's Saturday the 22nd from 4 o'clock to 7 at Timpanogos Middle School. Our high school culinary ProStart program does the dinner every year, and it's amazing. I mean, it really, truly is amazing food, and they do such a good job. We'll have a winter clothing drive, so there will be tables set up, and all the clothing that has been donated in the last couple of weeks will be organized for families to be able to get those things that they need. We'll have music, like Sai said. We'll also have a service project going on called Cards of Kindness, where folks can come and listen to music and create some cards, some holiday cheer, and we will be delivering those to some of our partners. For example, the Children's Justice Center, the hospital, for those who are going to be in the hospital during the holidays. So that will be fun, and that's for all ages.
And are these some of the volunteer opportunities that are in the offing for
folks?
We
actually do need some more help. We have games happening as well for kids. So we could use some more volunteers, and they can reach out to us directly. My email is Kathy at our Wasatch Community Foundation. That's probably the quickest way to get them connected to volunteer for this Saturday.
How about how many people do you think you'll serve on Saturday?
Well, last year we had close to 600, so it's a big event. It does go for 3 hours. However, I would suggest that folks come before 7 o'clock because we could run out of food, depending on how many people we have. And I know this year is a little bit tough for a lot of families, and so we want to make sure that everyone is able to have a nice Thanksgiving meal.
Can you remind us where and when this is happening? It's Saturday.
It's Saturday, November 22nd, 4 o'clock to 7 p.m. at Timpanogos Middle School, and that's in Heber.
Okay. And more information on the foundation's website for folks?
Yes, and also on social media. You can follow us on Facebook. It's Wasatch Community Foundation. We post all of our events there.
And if folks go to the website, they can also learn about how to connect with foundation programs.
Absolutely, yes. And it's our, OURWCF for Wasatch Community Foundation. So ourwcf.org. And then you can reach either Kathy or me with just Kathy at or Cy at ourwcf.org.
Okay. Anything else you want people to know about the foundation and its impact?
Go ahead, Cy.
I like lots of answers. That's good.
Right. Yes.
We would just love to have more people engaged and involved. There is no better place, I don't think, to put your energies because we support such a broad base of the community. We really look at a variety of needs, support a lot of organizations. So it's a great place. If you're not sure where to get involved, come seek us out at the Wasatch Community Foundation.
I mean, among those pillars, there's something for everyone.
That's exactly right, Jennifer.
Kathy, do you have anything to add?
Well, what I love the most about our foundation, too, is that we are all volunteers. So we give our heart and soul with no pay, and we're fine with that because we want every dollar that is donated to go directly back to our community. We do have one very part-time person who does some of our administrative things, but other than that, we're all volunteers. There are a couple of really big holiday events coming up and chances to serve some more, and that would be our Christmas bags, which is a program that we do for children in the valley to be fed daily during the Christmas break. So that's usually for 2 weeks. Last year we bagged, I think, 1,600, and the whole community gets together through donating food, and it's specific food items that can fit into a bag, and then they all join and they all put those bags together. So that would be December the 5th from 4 o'clock to 6 or 6 to 8. And you can find the link to sign up for a time slot on Just Serve under Wasatch Community Foundation. Or again, you can email us or follow us on our Facebook page. We've got the links there as well. And IH is our major sponsor for this event. So we love it. It's a great community builder, and we help a lot of kids during the Christmas holiday. And then just one more thing I wanted to do a shout out for, and we're partners with all of our nonprofits and in our community, so we advertise for them as well. But there is a blood drive November 24th at the Wasatch County Rec Center from 2:30 to 7 p.m. So again, that's November 24th. Then December 5th, between 10 a.m. and 6 p.m. at the Rec Center, will be a clothing and toy exchange. Folks can come and again get clothing and gently use toys, and that's a great community builder as well. And then finally, we have our cottages for kids. The money that is raised will help our Children's Justice Center, which is a very important program and a partner with us, and that would be December 6th. So lots happening during the holidays. But we've got lots happening year-round as well.
It sounds like it, and I'm sure it's greatly appreciated by the community. That's really all the time we have this morning, but I want to thank both of you for coming and speaking with us and also for the work that you're doing for your community.
Thank you so much for having us on.
Anytime.
Thank you, KBCW.
Summit County has approved two conservation easements that move it a step closer to buying the Ure Ranch. But KBCW's Connor Thomas reports the federal shutdown delayed the Camas Valley deal.
The Summit County Council approved two conservation easements Wednesday that are required to close the county's purchase of valuable ranch land. The Ure Ranch spans 834 acres west of Camas. County Lands and Natural Resources Director Jess Kirby says the easements ban development and mining on the property but preserve agricultural use.
We did reserve the ability for one residential home to be built on this property. If we were in the future are to sell it to a producer.
The easements approved Wednesday are for the so-called North Meadows and recreation land. The meadows sit north of State Route 248 and east of Democrat Alley. That's where the single building could go. The recreation land surrounds the present-day Gun Club Road west 200 south. Summit County envisions moving the Gun Club Road north on that land to stop Wasatch County-bound traffic from disturbing residents in Spring Meadows. That's the only land where the general public may be allowed to hike, bike, fish, or hunt. It would be non-motorized recreation. Both the North Meadows and the recreation land easements allow the landowner to use motor vehicles. Summit Land Conservancy CEO Cheryl Fox says the public is not allowed any motorized recreation. The county will be the landowner for now, and whoever owns the land 100 years from now will need to abide by the conservation easements, which are primarily to protect open space, water, and agriculture.
If you're doing something in your private recreation that is impacting the conservation values of the property, then that would be an easement violation.
The Ure Ranch deal is $25 million total. The county made a $5 million down payment in 2023 with funds from a voter-approved open space bond. The county extended the closing deadline from the end of this year to 2026 with an extra $2 million from the bond. Kirby tells KPCW that, like the 910 cattle ranch deal in western Summit County, the Ure Ranch acquisition was delayed by the government shutdown since there's federal money involved. Summit County and the Summit Land Conservancy are financial supporters of KPCW. Connor Thomas, KPCW News.
Joining us now is Mallory Bateman from the Kemsey Gardner Policy Institute, and she's going to fill us in about the population predictions for Utah and the Wasatch back over the next few decades. Good morning, Mallory.
Good morning.
How are you?
Good. How are you? Thanks for having me.
Oh, thanks for being with us. So I was looking at the report, and it sounds like or looks like the Utah population is going to increase from about 3.6 million residents to 5.6 million by 2065. That seems like a lot.
It does seem like a lot, but I want to throw out a couple little caveats. So we get to redo these projections every 4 years. And last time around, we thought we were going to hit that 5.5, 5.6 million in 2060. So we're seeing some input data that really made our growth trends moderate a little bit and slow down. And then if we look back, we've added around 500,000 new residents every decade since the 90s. And so we have a track record. I know it gets more and more, acute, pinch pointy with our growth, but we have added this many residents in the past. So it's not wildly off from where we've been.
So the fact that I feel like there's more cars on the road is just, it's not happening as fast as I think it is.
I mean, different parts of the state are definitely experiencing it differently. And, you know, I will say on the Wasatch back, Wasatch County was one of the fastest growing counties in the state last decade. And we think it will continue to be a fast growing county. So there are areas that are experiencing it in very different ways.
Well, I want to ask you about Wasatch County specifically, but can you first tell me, like, what are the various data points that are considered when you're producing these projection reports?
Yeah, so this is a demographic and economic model that we run and created at the Gardner Institute. And so we take in kind of basics of demographics and the economy. And so we look at births, we look at deaths, and we do that through fertility rates and life expectancy. And then on the economic side, we model 23 different kind of big industry sectors for the state and then divvy that up throughout the counties. And so the economic side is what gives us the insights into migration. And that's the one that's a lot harder to predict and kind of have a good understanding of. But that's how we frame this up.
And over the years, are there any trends in one area or another? Is it economics is driving this more, or migration, or I mean, can you even say?
Yeah. So I mean, if broadly speaking, Utah has been a state where the birth and death part of it has really been the strong driver of growth. And so we looked back 30 years to then look, or 40 years, 40 years to look forward. And so if we look from like 1985 to now, about two-thirds of our growth was coming from basically more births than deaths. And then about a third was coming from movers. And we think in this next 40 years, that's going to flip. So we think, you know, two-thirds over the 40-year period will come from movers versus the births minus deaths. And counties experience that differently as well. But, you know, statewide, that's the picture. And we see some different things along the Wasatch Back.
So let's talk about the Wasatch Back. What do things like look like over here for us in the future?
So you all are part of that continued growth story as well. And I pulled the information yesterday, kind of digging through. You all have had a much stronger relationship with migration in the past than kind of the state picture. And we think that's going to continue into the future. But we do have Wasatch County being one of our fastest growing counties. That's in, you know, relationship to the size of the population overall and the people you can add. But continued growth in the area, and then, you know, some changing growth dynamics. So we think that birth minus death part is going to stop playing as big of a role in Summit County in kind of the mid-2030s, late 2030s. And then kind of out a little bit further in the late 2040s in Wasatch County.
That's interesting because we keep hearing like school enrollment is down every year. And so I don't know, that seems like contrary to growth.
It's one of the factors, right? So, I mean, the kids in school now are the ones that would have been born during a period where our fertility rates really started to decline. Mm-hmm. And so if you look at the births today, you know, in the past couple of years, we've leveled off a little bit in the total birth. And so that group of kids is going to age up in 5 years, right? And they'll start hitting K-12. So we might see a little bit of shifts in some of those dynamics. I know it can be also very different at the city level or community level. And this work stays at the state and county level just because of the type of model it is. But yeah, we do think the share of kids is going to decrease over time just because we are seeing fewer births. And then the older population, so, you know, 65 and older is going to keep increasing as a share of the population.
Mm-hmm. How do housing prices impact our growth here in Utah?
Yeah, so that's not something we can actually include in this model. Mm-hmm. But, you know, if it shows up in the data, that would be kind of our one way to think about it. But we have seen a lot of movers to the state lately in the past couple of years. And so that made an impact. It seems like that migration is slowing down a little bit. So that might be one of the ways we could see it in our data. But it's part of the producing these numbers is so that people have a little bit more informed picture of what the future might look like to then have those conversations about their specific subject area.
And so you do these studies every 4 years, is that what you said?
Yeah, this 40-year look we do every 4 years.
Okay, and how does this help state and local governments plan for the kinds of impacts that we see?
Yeah, so I'm really well versed in how it interacts with like transportation planning, and our state has a long history of that. And so these are inputs for their models, and then they use their data, which is different, and their models, which are different, to then break it down to small areas. So then it's useful for transportation modeling and thinking about it. You know, Division of Water Resources uses these insights to help them think about what the future might look like. I'm sure there are others. I know we have a lot of kind of private industry folks that are just really curious. because not every state does this work. So that's another thing. We've got this long history of growing, and we've actually had this long history of producing these projections. So it was some great foresight by people in the, you know, 60s and 70s to help think about what the future Utah might look like. They set up a good historical precedent for us to continue doing this work now.
That's quite amazing, actually. But I feel like we've just always been good planners in Utah.
Yeah. I think we definitely have a good history of it. And even, you know, efforts like those that came out of Envision Utah with, you know, using some of these insights from earlier projections to try to think about how we grow and where we grow has made a different Utah than what we would have had without, you know, concerted thought behind it.
And are there any particular impacts you see for the Wasatch County or Summit County?
Yeah. So one thing, you guys are a little bit older back there than, you know, the statewide total or maybe the Wasatch Front. And so that share of older adults is really going to increase over time. At the state level, it goes from more at one in eight now, and it goes to 1 in 4 by the end of the period. And Summit County is already at, you know, 1 in 5, around 20%, and then stays in that kind of 25% for the whole time. And then Wasatch County actually ages a little bit quicker and ends up with around, you know, 30% of residents. So, you know, 1 in 3-ish at the end of the horizon. So that age structure insight is kind of interesting. And then the impact of movers is going to be the big thing. And that's, again, that's one where, you know, we make the best assumptions we can with the data we have at the time. But movers are going to be the real growth in residents. Mm-hmm. Moving forward.
Well, everywhere you go back here on the Wasatch back, we just see new housing everywhere, and the conversation is always about growth and how we get the right transportation and how we have enough housing stock for all the people that are coming. So I guess on some level it's what you're seeing is not a surprise, because this has been our trajectory for a while.
Wasatch has really kind of blown up. And I know, too, I mean, I don't live in Wasatch County, but I was a frequent visitor for a time. And even in that window, you know, seeing the changes going on felt pretty wild. So I do understand, you know, those challenges of growth are a very real thing. But hopefully these numbers can help provide some insights that would, you know, be useful for communities when they're thinking about the future.
And this study took about 18 months, is that right?
Yeah, there's a lot of background research that goes into it, and then waiting for certain data points to come through. And so there are some specific, like, economic events that we knew of and had data behind, or, you know, did research into to get data. And then our fertility and mortality assumptions took a good bit of research as well. So I know a lot of people are like, oh, we can just keep drawing a straight line, go out into the future. But I just want to convey, we try to provide a little more nuance than that.
Well, if only life were that simple all the time, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Anything else you want us to know?
All of this information is available online, so anyone can go and grab it on gardner.utah.edu. And we have a couple different ways for people to access the information. So if people are curious, they can absolutely go and check it out and poke around in the numbers. And we will be sharing a little more depth into the background work later on in a couple of months.
Okay. Well, we can't wait to see that. And we really appreciate your time this morning. And thanks. Come on anytime.
All right. Thanks for having me.
We're going to jump back into a little local news for you. The Heber Valley Hospital has earned a leadership award for its rural healthcare programming. The hospital has been recognized for providing high-quality care to rural residents. The Chartis Center for Rural Health presented the 2025 Performance Leadership Award to the Heber Hospital for its level of care and patient experience. Other Utah hospitals in Vernal, Panguitch, Milford, Monticello, Mount Pleasant, were also recognized for their service to rural communities. And a new school plan for Wasatch County would give adults with cognitive disabilities a place to keep learning after they finish public school. KPCW's Grace Dorfler has more about the Aspen Center for Learning.
Transitioning to adulthood can bring challenges for young people with disabilities who are no longer eligible for public school and some services once they turn 22.
A lot of people are not aware of the virtual cliff that these kids drop off of at age 21.
That's J.W. Davies, a dad who speaks from experience. His son, Tate, who has Down syndrome, is 24. Davies said leaving high school and losing the daily routine of classes and time with friends was tough for his son. He says when services stop, it makes it hard for young adults with cognitive or developmental disabilities to find community or retain life skills. That's why he thinks continuing education opportunities are badly needed in the Heber Valley. His planned school, the Aspen Center for Learning, would include classrooms, a kitchen, a gym, and even some housing.
We're going to provide services including educational opportunities, but also just life skill building.
The school will be able to accommodate up to 80 students, including room for 8 students who could live on campus. For Shanna Mendenhall, the mission of the Future Aspen Center is personal. She cares for her sister, who currently attends the same day program as Tate Davies.
My sister is 45 years old, so she has been out of the public school system for 23 years. And so to give her an opportunity to get back into an education setting where she has all of those resources at her fingertips, along with therapy and Special Olympics, it's just incredible.
The Mendenhall family owns Lake Creek Homes and is donating general contracting for the school. Davies estimates he'll need around $11 million in fundraising. He and the school's board of directors have raised over $3 million so far. Davies' goal is to open the school sometime in 2028. It will be east of downtown Heber. The Wasatch County Council voted on a conditional use permit for the school in April. Grace Dorfler, KPCW News.
And we're back with another local NewsHour guest. This morning with us, we have Ski Utah President and CEO Nathan Rafferty. And he's going to let us know where Utah skiers and riders are going to see some resort upgrades this season. Good morning, Nathan.
Good morning, Jennifer. How are you?
I'm well. Thanks for being with us here in the studio.
Nice job filling in.
Yeah. I said yesterday afternoon, Roger's sick. Oh, yeah, sure, I'll do it. And then I was about 3 hours later, I'm like, oh, no, I have to do it. But, you know.
You're doing a great job. Well, fun to see a new face here.
Well, thanks. I am having a really good time, and I love meeting all the different people that come to the local NewsHour. So just remind us quickly about Ski Utah and what you guys do.
Sure. So most people know the name Ski Utah, and they think of us as either the Snow Report or our Passport program. So that's the 4th, 5th, and 6th grade
right.
Super cheap pass. We are a 501c6 marketing association, and we represent all 16 resorts in the state. And we do marketing, government relations, and then what we call legacy programs. So those are the kids programs that the goal of that is to grow lifelong skiers. So get people into the sport when they're young and hope that they continue to ski their whole lives. And so we work very closely with Visit Park City / Park City Chamber, Visit Salt Lake, the state of Utah, and their promotional efforts. And I think most people know our tagline, greatest snow on earth. And a close second is just the promoting the easy access that we have from our awesome airport.
All of those things are true.
Yeah.
And I will tell you this little aside is that about getting kids involved. My husband, who has taught some skiing, we have a neighbor who's now 12. He got her up at about 2.5 or 3.
Yep.
And she skis with us every Sunday and has for all those years. And I thought, well, she's 12 now and she's not going to want to go anymore because, you know.
It's pretty amazing and an amazing sport. I have a video from a year or two ago where we had 4 generations skiing together. My wife's dad, her sister, her sister's daughter, and her sister's daughter's son. And to see 4 generations skiing down at Park City Mountain was pretty cool.
It's never a bad day on the mountain, any mountain.
It's awesome.
So let's talk a little bit first about Mother Nature and what she's doing to us at the start of this season. Are you a little nervous or are you?
You know, I'm kind of over being nervous. I used to, you know, worry about it, but I've been in Utah for 54 years now and have yet to see it not snow. So sometimes it's early, sometimes it's late. I can tell you the resorts are locked and loaded and ready to go as soon as things cool down a little bit. But we're lucky in this town to have, you know, some of the best, if not the best, snowmaking technology in the world. And as soon as things cool down a little bit, those guys are going to crank things up and we'll get things going. And that being said, Brian Head opens today in about 10 minutes. Well, actually an hour and 10. I think they open at 10 a.m.
Let's go.
Let's beam in. We've got people headed down that way and going to go be skiing. So Utah's open as of today.
That is great. So there have been some upgrades at various resorts over the off season. So tell us what we can expect.
Yeah, you know, once we do get going, which is adding a little bit to the pain because it's going to be such an exciting season. There is so much happening. I don't think I have to dive into what's happening at Deer Valley too much. People have probably in this town heard what's going on. But statewide, over the last 2 years, we've seen an all-time record, about $600 million of capital improvements. So Deer Valley is kind of sucking the oxygen out of the room for all the other upgrades that are happening.
Sure.
But if I go from, let's go south to north.
Great.
Brian Head opening today. I think you're going to see in the next decade them grow from a current 8 lifts to about 26.
Wow.
They're going to grow dramatically. So they've got one side of the resort is a kind of real estate development that will include a bunch of lifts. And then they just got jumped through another hurdle with the Forest Service that's going to kind of streamline things. And I think you'll see new lifts happening there and some really good skiing. Sundance has a brand new hotel in their base area that's coming online, 63 room. And, you know, Sundance doesn't do anything halfway. It's going to be a beautiful spot down there. Obviously, Deer Valley basically bolting on another ski resort to their ski resort, more than doubling in size. We've heard all the stats, 100 new runs and 10 new lifts. I cannot wait to ski some of that terrain. And along with that comes, top of the line snowmaking. So I'm really excited for that side. And then the much needed gondola down in the Canyons base area at Park City. So that'll be fantastic. And a ton of upgrades on their side as well. If we move around the corner, I'm trying to think. Snowbird's got a brand new restaurant, Mid-Mountain Restaurant, mm-hmm. that's been 2 years in the making. And that is a spectacular new restaurant. So it's sitting right in the same spot as the old Mid-Mountain Lodge. It's called The Nest. Alta realigned a lift that was much needed. Snow Basin added a brand new chairlift. Well, they replaced their Becker chair that was a fixed grip triple, and it's now a high-speed quad, and it's going to open up some really great skiing there. And then Powder Mountain added a new lift to the private side of their mountain. And then they've got plans in the next year to open up a new lift and a whole new bowl. The list goes on and on and on. And then all the way up top, in fact, I'm going up tomorrow morning early to Beaver Mountain for a ribbon cutting at a brand new base lodge. And for them, you know, pound for pound, that's like the biggest upgrade in the state. So that's the longest family-owned ski resort in North America, and excited to see them welcome this new base lodge. So if you haven't had a chance to get up north and ski Beaver, go do it. It's a fun road trip.
What does all this investment mean for the ski industry in Utah? Like, does it mean more locals? Does it mean more travelers? Do we know?
You know, all of the above. People like new. And, you know, the ski industry is no different than anything else, whether it's a restaurant or a hotel. If it stays the same, you kind of get bypassed by your neighbors. And it's important. There are kind of technical important upgrades, which are the lift infrastructure. You know, you sit on a fixed grip chairlift now, and it feels like it's broken. We're so used to sitting on high-speed quads and getting up the mountain fast. Some of the boring but important stuff are the upgrades to snowmaking that we don't really see, and it's not flashy and splashy that you want to put on your website. But, you know, that's the stuff that typically gets us open early and keeps us open late, and just an insurance policy. So it definitely means, we got to keep up with our competition in Colorado and California and Whistler.
Yeah, there are lots of choices for the traveling skier. The Deer Valley snowmaking sounds like it's just going to be like a whole level above what we're used to.
Yeah, and that technology's come a long way, too. It's more energy efficient, just easier to use, can make snow at higher temperatures and kind of tailor make the snow too. You could make snow for a race run that's really hard and fast. You could make recreational snow. You can make snow different, 1,000 feet higher than you do down at the base. And so that technology has come a long way.
Yeah, that sounds incredible. You just shift the nozzle to get something different? Is that how it works?
I don't know what kind of wizardry happens, but it has a lot to do with computers and people way smarter than me.
Engineers.
Yeah.
People who went to school
exactly.
very seriously.
But, we just, if you look at Ski Utah's YouTube channel or on any of our social stuff, we just did a really cool like mini movie about one of the Deer Valley snowmakers, a guy named Bear.
Cool.
And it's amazing how much effort they put into snowmaking and the long hours those guys put in to get us up and skiing and, you know, I think underappreciated.
Well, I'm sure that's true because that's really the Dawn Patrol people.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
These guys are up early and out late.
What other exciting things are happening in skiing this year for Utah?
You know, exciting for us is Ski Utah's 50th anniversary.
Wow.
So we've been around since 1975. And, you know, I always tell people that our secret sauce is the cooperation between our resorts. And it's easy to think of these resorts as competitors, but I can tell you, it's a little different in Utah. When I talk to, there's a Ski Utah type organization in just about every ski region mm-hmm. in the U.S. There's California Skiers Association, Ski Vermont, Ski New Hampshire. They all, you know, kind of look at us as the model and are kind of blown away by how well everybody works together.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Deidre and Todd and Gar out at Woodward are all super close. And if people have issues, they lean on their compatriots for help in all sorts of ways. So it's a great business to be in.
You did not mention Woodward in your rundown of things. Are they having any upgrades this year that we know about?
You know, I think they have some new pass products. I'm not tuned up enough to tell you exactly. I would hate to tell you something wrong, but I will tell you I was at Woodward the other night for a little party we threw, and we're just so lucky to have that facility in our town. Where was that when I was 16 years old? I was on a banged up half pipe in my buddy's backyard, and Woodward is just this amazing asset to our community. So
well, and reflective of the aerialists and Olympic athletes that have developed here, and now we're like, seems like we're working on the whole next generation.
Yeah, I pass it twice a day, you know, going to and from work up and down Parley's Canyon, and parking lot's always jammed, and it's just fun to see people ski until into the evening, and it just, what a, you know, Shangri-La of ski stuff, so fun.
It's really cool. It really adds a whole new dynamic to what Utah offers people.
Yeah, it's very different than, you know, what Park City or Deer Valley opens. It's not in competition with, it complements those things, and, you know, I could see kids wanting to ride all day at Park City and then spend all night at Woodward.
It feels like, too, you talk about cooperation, that's really like what's good for one is good for all, that like we lift each other across the state in the ski industry by having partnerships.
100%. We all have, you know, very similar issues, and so we work hard on some of those things, and yeah, I mean, it's not a zero-sum game by any means. We're, you know, our competition is in, you know, if we look beyond the ski industry, it's cruise ships and beach vacations and things that are easy. You're right. You grab your board shorts and flip-flops and a towel and away you go. And you think about a ski vacation, there are a lot of moving parts. But what keeps us afloat is that it's so stinking fun. And, you know, there's nothing like a good powder day.
Yeah, you're not going to find me on a cruise.
Yeah, me neither. But
I mean, no disrespect to people who love cruising, but yeah. Not my game, skiing.
Has its place, but yeah. I'll take skiing all
Absolutely.
Day.
Absolutely. Anything else you want us to know about what's coming?
You know, I would say that take a peek at our website for the latest opening dates. Things are shifting around a little bit all around the West. But also, if you've got a fourth, fifth, or sixth grader in your household, the best place and most inexpensive way to get them skiing is buy one of our buy our passport product. So,
yeah, that's a screaming deal.
Yeah, and I think prices go up on December 1st. So they jump from $69 all the way up to $89. And that's 3 lift tickets at every resort in the state. So 3 at Park City, 3 at Deer Valley, 3 at Bryan Head. You can't beat it, and would love to see more kids out on the slopes.
So where's your opening day going to be this year?
My personal opening day? Gosh, that's a good question. I wish I was down with our gang at Bryanhead today. I don't know the answer to that question. Often it's at Brighton because they kind of pop open pretty quickly. So who knows? Whoever opens first, I'll be there, no question.
Okay, well, just...
Except for Bryanhead.
Shoot me a text and I'll meet you.
Okay, deal.
Okay. That's Nathan Rafferty, the Ski Utah president and CEO, giving us a preview of the season. And we are going to have snow.
Guarantee it.
Okay. All right. Thanks so much for being here.